Welcome to the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast. With your host, Joe Manko. Yahoo Sports. This is the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast. Right now.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the FC Yahoo Podcast. I'm Joe Lago, editor of Yahoo Sports' soccer blog, FC Yahoo. And joining me to talk about the soccer news of the moment and the upcoming Major League Soccer season are Shahan Ahmed.
Luis Enrique's new replacement.
We'll get to that. Joey Gallino.
Wait, are you breaking news that you're going to take over at the Camp Nou?
I'm just saying I'm available. Interesting. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
And Leander Scharlakens.
I will not be leaving Yahoo at the end of this season.
Shahan, it's not going to happen. Sorry, man.
Why you got to do this, Joe?
I believe in you. You're going to Europe for a reason in a few weeks. I believe in you.
I am going to Europe, and I do plan on seeing Barcelona play. I'm going to talk to Luis, see if he can put in a good word, see what happens.
So before we get to our much-anticipated MLS talk, first we must discuss the big story in world soccer. Luis Enrique will be leaving Barcelona at season's end after 3 years on the job. He dropped that news on the Spanish media after Barcelona beat Sporting Gijón 6-1 to take over the top spot in La Liga. Luis Enrique cited, quote, a need to rest, unquote. And he also went on to say, quote, that's the main reason why I'm not going to continue. So I think Luis Enrique's exit was sealed when Barca lost 4-0 at PSG in the first leg of their Champions League round of 16 tie. But is there anything about this announcement that was surprising or interesting for you guys?
Yeah, I personally think that it was interesting how he delivered it. He waited till all the press had asked all their questions about the match, and then he said, wait, I have something to say. Let me just let you guys know. I'm kind of tired. I don't really want to continue doing this anymore. I'm going to leave at the end of the season. And then he got up and walked away before anyone could ask any questions, which is pretty G, I think, is the official term, official way to describe what he just did. No, I mean, it's not shocking. I think that Barcelona had seemed like they'd lost a little bit of luster recently, and that 4-0 just completely compounded it. But, you know, when you kind of look at, there were calls for people to say, you know, it's time for him to go, and me included, I do think that that job is just takes such a toll on you that it's tough to last more than 3 years. When you look at what he did, his first season, he almost got sacked in January and then turned it around and won a treble. The next season, he did the double, and it was seen as like this massive failure because he didn't win the Champions League, and Real Madrid won it, so it was, you know, double bad. But and then this season, he's in the Copa del Rey final, which you would take them to beat Alaves. It's not like they're playing, you know, Sevilla or Real Madrid or even Athletic Bilbao or anything. And then they're top of Spain right now. Granted, Real Madrid has a match in hand, but they still have an El Clasico to go. It's at the Bernabeu, but still, Barcelona can win the league, and it's all up to them. They don't have to rely on anybody else. If they win out, or frankly, if they just play better than Real Madrid for the rest of the season and beat them head-to-head, they get the league, and he does another double on the way out. The only trophies he would have not managed to take hold of in 3 years are two Champions Leagues if he goes out to PSG, which I think we're all in agreement that more than likely he's going to go out.
When Pep Guardiola was there, there was obviously like a huge, like Barcelona was always kind of a world brand. It was always a name brand, but I think there was a lot attached to the success that Pep had at Barcelona and how he was kind of, you know, his team's rise kind of coincided with Spain and the tiki-taka style, sort of not reinventing the game or revolutionizing, but, you know, it was definitely a new frontier in the way that the game was played. And as soon as he left, and, you know, even Pep himself cited burnout as one of the reasons that he left in the first place. You know, when he left, the club went through, I think Tito Villanova was the next manager, and, you know, rest in peace. Obviously, that was a tough situation and the way that all played out. And then after that, you go to Tata Martino. I think that, and what I'm getting at is, I think Luis Enrique was in some ways a guy who had to steady the ship, so to speak. Not that Barcelona was really in trouble, But, you know, he's been there for 3 years, and I heard some pundit, or I either read this or heard this, you know, like managing Barcelona for 3 years is like managing three decades at another club. Shahan, as you alluded to, the way that, you know, there's so much pressure and so many expectations. And then I think the first year that he was there, you know, like you said, he almost got sacked in January, but then he went on to win, you know, the treble. And that's almost like, what can you do beyond that? You know, you're almost like built to fail from there on out. If you don't do that. And as someone who, you know, has got a rich history with the club, playing and managing, I think he reached, you know, the limit. And I agree, it was kind of a weird way to announce this. It almost reminded me of Manuel Pellegrini and Manchester City last year. He was basically at the end of his press conference. He said, oh, by the way, I'm not going to be here next year. But, you know, he's had so much pressure on him, and there's been such a spotlight on everything else that I kind of get it. You know, like he can't. You know, he's probably under so much pressure. He's like, I can't take questions about this right now. I just need, this needs to happen, and then I need to go do my work, you know.
The timing of it is definitely curious, I think, because if you actually look at the progression of the season, obviously the PSG debacle was maybe a big trigger in this thing. But at the same time, as Shahan was saying, Barca is turning it around in the league. At one point, Real had a one-point lead, but they had two games in hand. So hypothetically, they had a 7-point lead. And given that they went through a streak at one point of 40 games without losing one, it was a pretty safe bet that they were going to pick up at least 4 points from those two games in hand. And, you know, at that point, the way La Liga tends to function, the title is pretty much over, even with one Clásico to go. But Real's really started spilling points. I mean, they were lucky to tie Las Palmas 3-3. Because they were a man down, although then again they had three disallowed goals, but they only got a point from that game. They lost to Valencia 2 weekends ago. So all of a sudden, Barca has actually, on the night that Luis Enrique announced that he was quitting, Barca jumped into first place because Real was dropping points. So, you know, now all of a sudden he's in position to do a third double in his third year, plus a Champions League title, which isn't so bad. Of course, that Champions League elimination would be Barca's worst run in Europe in 10 years, which was the last time they didn't reach the quarterfinals. But, you know, so the timing is a little bit odd, but I think this is the problem with being Barcelona manager and why so many managers burn through that job. Even Guardiola staying only 4 years, even Frank Rijkaard stayed 5 years, I believe, is that it's an impossible job in a lot of ways. You're supposed to dominate. You're supposed to win everything there is to win. Anything short of that is a crisis. You know, you lose a game, and then 2 games later, maybe you tie a game. It's a crisis, and people are calling for your head. And even if you are winning, and even if you are dominating, you have to do it like playing the greatest soccer that anybody has ever seen. So it has to be tiki-taka, and it has to be this, and it has to be groundbreaking, and it has to be paradigm shifting. So I can see how in the enormous media glare of Barcelona, which is, I think, unequal to anywhere else, that you get burned out pretty quick.
When Pep left in 2012, you know, he said that he needed to recharge his batteries. And it led me to think, with after Luis Enrique's announcement, it's hard for us to imagine just how suffocating the job can be. Is there an American sports equivalent to being Barcelona manager?
I mean, not one that's where it's endemic to the job I can think of. I mean, you know, like I would immediately what comes to mind is Yankees manager. But then I would say that, you know, baseball is arguably, you know, starting to decline a little bit in popularity. And, you know, the as much as the New York media feasts upon you, you know, I think that there's more reasonable expectations because of the economics of the games in the United States and the leagues and the way that, you know, there's salary caps in certain leagues, not baseball, obviously, but it's kind of tilted toward competitiveness. You know, soccer is different, and Barcelona can pay these wages and rely on its academy and rely on its prestige. And with that comes a certain set of expectations.
You can, if you win a championship in an American sports league, your job is safe for at least a year, if not two. You know, you win the Super Bowl, you win the NBA championship, you're going to be in your job for a while. Claudio Ranieri got fired 9 months after winning the Premier League. Yeah. You know, Luis Enrique, I think even if he wins the league this year, if he hadn't left of his own volition, I'm not sure that they would have brought him back. I remember several times Real Madrid fired a manager right after winning the league, including Manuel Pellegrini. That it's pretty common in soccer. I mean, the teams are very trigger happy. But to spin this forward a little bit, I think what'll be really interesting here is to see how Barcelona reacts, because there's different precedents here. When Jupp Heynckes was announced that he was leaving Bayern Munich in 2013, the team did the treble before he left. He was making way for Guardiola. When Manuel Pellegrini in 2015 was basically lame ducked in January, also for Guardiola, the team kind of crumbled. So, you know, it can really swing either way.
So Lionel Messi still has not signed a new contract with Barcelona. His current deal expires June of 2018. There are reports that, you know, negotiations are still ongoing and that they won't impact or they weren't impacted by Luis Enrique's decision, and they won't be impacted going forward. But Messi turns 30 on June 24th, and he joins quite a few Barcelona veterans who are now in that 30 and over club: Andres Iniesta, Mascherano, Gerard Piqué, Luis Suarez, and Busquets and Rakitic are both 28. And my question to you guys is, will Lionel Messi be a Barcelona player next season? Do you think this Luis Enrique decision, and I'm going to preface this with, you know, Barcelona does have to pay for this major renovation of the Camp Nou, which is going to be a four-year project. If you go by recent estimates, it's, you know, at least $350 million, and where are they going to pay for that? So this is a roundabout way of asking, will Barcelona shift into a new era with these aging players? I know Lionel Messi is Lionel Messi, but could you see that drastic of a change, or will they just keep rolling along with what they have?
Anyone who tries to throw out Lionel Messi is committing suicide in Barcelona. You can't. If he wants to leave and he pushes his way out the door, that's a whole different story. Mm-hmm. But if anybody tried to sell Lionel Messi and he wasn't on board with it, or they tried to pull a fast one, no way. Just you can't justify the renovation for the new Camp Nou by selling Lionel Messi. Frankly, in Spain, they leverage all their big spending transfer moves and everything. The clubs are generally just relying on banks to...
It's on credit.
Yeah, it's all credit. So to say that you need to sell a player to raise the funds, it's like, no, you're going to be kind of relying on credit anyway to do any spending.
Let me rephrase it. Now that, you know, Messi had his, you know, it wasn't always smooth sailing with Messi and Luis Enrique. And even if Messi brings in, reportedly his preference is Jorge Sampaoli, and we'll get to who should replace Luis Enrique in a minute. But, you know, there's a manager in Manchester who knows Lionel Messi, who's looking to bring in his own players. Could you see that scenario playing out where Pep Guardiola does manage to recruit a Lionel Messi to Man City?
It's possible, and Pep would be the guy that would love to have Lionel more than anybody. I think I think it was 2 years ago when he went to the Camp Nou and watched from the stands ahead of, they weren't even playing each other, but he was just doing some reconnaissance work, but he went in civilian clothes and didn't sit in a box. And there was video of him just going nuts when Messi scored and just pretty much beside himself, obviously not realizing he was on, you know, being recorded. Of course, Pep is probably Lionel Messi's number one fan because he did the treble with Messi. He's the guy who pretty much pushed Zlatan to the outside to put Messi right up the middle. And he would love to have Lionel, as would any other manager in the world, love to have Messi on the team. But Messi going to the Premier League, leaving Barcelona, that would, like, Pep couldn't force him to do anything. That has to come entirely from Lionel Messi, because he's that one special player that, for that club, for the past, what, dozen years plus, you know, about a dozen years, I think now it is. He's been the club. He's been the only guy that, you know, they say, more than a club. Lionel Messi is the definition of more than a club for the last dozen years. He is more than the club that is more than a club.
I think looking at this from Barcelona's perspective, he is more than the club. I almost wonder if there's reports that Messi rejected a new deal proposal that Barcelona offered him. And if I was Barcelona, it's a dangerous game, and it's really easy for me to sit here in my comfortable chair in the podcasting studios in Playa Vista and say this. But Messi, if I'm not mistaken, joined the academy when he was 11, right? Like, he relocated from Argentina.
All he knows is Barcelona.
All he knows is Barcelona. So I would say to him, Manchester, lovely city, don't get me wrong, but and Pep is there, and Manchester City's got incredible resources, some great attacking players. It would be a great fit. But I would almost say, it's not that you don't like change. You don't know change, Change with bringing in new players is one thing, but you've been at this club in this place, this beachside town in the north east of Spain, if I'm not mistaken, for almost two decades. Do you really want to uproot all of that? Do you really want to go somewhere else? I would call his bluff. I would say, you know what? And I'm not saying this to lowball Messi, but I'm saying that, I agree with what Shahan said. If you're the manager who's on the record as selling Messi, good luck, getting another job anywhere else ever again. But I think that while I'm not ruling it out that he would go to Manchester City, I just don't see it happening. I think it's because, in part, Messi is sort of an insular superstar. He's not someone who is bombastic with his social media and the things that he does. He's very insulated, and he likes the way things are, and he hasn't really had a lot of change from the perspective that I mentioned over the course of his career.
Yeah, leaving Barcelona for Manchester by the Sea is a tough thing to do.
Yeah, I mean, Messi has been at the club since he was 13, and I don't see him leaving at all. I mean, he's remodeling a house that he just bought. He's basically bought up like an entire block just outside the city. His two little boys were born there. They grew up there. I think they're comfortable. I don't think he's going to leave. He has so much power at the club. He can pretty much pick his own manager and pick his own teammates, for that matter, and has. So I don't see that happening. I think what these negotiations with Messi boil down to more is posturing and grandstanding, because to Messi and Ronaldo both, it's important to be the best paid player in the world, because that sort of reflects and vindicates in their eyes their own status. And that got really complicated, I think, when the Chinese Super League started paying these enormous salaries and when they made Carlos Tevez possibly the best paid player in the world. So now Messi is going to want more than that. Josep Maria Bartomeu, the Barca president, has already said that he's going to, they're going to make sure that Messi is paid like the best player in the world. So it's there's this, that whole aspect to it. And I think it's less to do with Messi trying to force his way out or with leveraging it than them just kind of going back and forth on what exactly he is going to be paid. I mean, it's not really going to change his life whether he makes 25 or 30 million euros, net after tax. It's just a matter of him wanting the club to show its appreciation. And for that matter, as to the idea that they would sell Messi to help pay for the new stadium or for the renovation of the stadium, I should say, I actually doubt that there is a transfer fee in the world that would compensate for not having Messi on your team for the next 5 years. I mean, considering what he brings in merchandising and image rights, which the club tends to own, what he brings in just in terms of prize money and results, I think you'd have a hard time putting a number on that.
Wait, did you say after tax? Messi paying tax, huh?
Uh-oh. So, you said it.
Well, there goes my attempt at fear-mongering for Barcelona fans. Let's move on to who should replace Luis Enrique as the next manager of Barcelona. Jorge Sampaoli of Sevilla appears to be the odds-on favorite. Then there's Ernesto Valverde of Athletic Bilbao. He's, depending on who you go, which odds maker site you go to, he's at least even with Sampaoli, or the second favorite. And then you've got Arsene Wenger of Arsenal, Mauricio Pochettino of Tottenham, and Everton's Ronald Koeman is also alleged top candidates. We all know that Barcelona likes to select managers who have a link to the club, and the ones that fit that criterion is Valverde and Koeman, who both played at Barcelona. Koeman obviously having been more of a star in the 80s and 90s. But Who do you guys think should be the next Barcelona manager?
If Lionel Messi likes Jorge Sampaoli, I would go with Jorge Sampaoli. I mean, you know, he's a fellow Argentine, and Lionel Messi knows as well as anybody what that manager is capable of, because in 2015 in the Copa America, Messi lost in the final, which was the second of the three finals he lost in consecutive years, and Jorge Sampaoli led Chile to their first ever Copa America victory. And, you know, on home soil, that was a huge, huge event. A lot of pressure on him to do so. And to do it against Messi and that Argentina team, it said a lot about the manager, because he was the guy. I mean, if you remember, there was a lot of turmoil in that camp. That was the year when Arturo Vidal crashed his Ferrari, leaving a casino late at night.
And then you would think the guy is out of the tournament, but...
No. He started. He continued on.
Not even repercussions whatsoever.
No, but that's the life of a football player, or football star, I should say. Also, leaving the casino late at night. That's the best part of that. Getting hammered at the casino, driving off in his Ferrari, totaling it. Those pictures for that car, still, like, it's shocking that nobody got hurt.
He still won the title.
Yeah. Hey, you know what? It was a heck of a year for him. He was probably Footballer of the Year in Chile that year. But getting back more to the point, though, Sampaoli's ability to come into Spanish football, and I mean, Sevilla is right there. You know, they were top of the table for a little. No, not top of the table, but they were neck and neck with Real Madrid for the first, I would say, third of the season. They're only a couple points back right now. I think they still have a game in hand, though, and it's looking like it's going to be a three-horse race from now until the end of the season. And Sampaoli, in his first year with Sevilla, to be able to pull this off, plus he has Sevilla competing in the Champions League, still probably the favorites to make it to the final eight, which is further than Barcelona are going to more than likely be this year. So from really, when you look at it, there's no real questions of, oh, will this guy be able to succeed in Spanish football? I think that he's proven this year that he can adapt to it. Is he good enough to be in the Champions League? He's showing that he is good enough to be in the Champions League, too. If Messi wants him, go and get the guy. I don't think there's any question. I think, you know, Koeman would, I think, leave in a second, because as great as the Everton job is and as great as it is managing the Premier League, you're still not one of those top six clubs. And more than likely, at best, you're going to be jostling for that sixth spot. And granted, they have a very talented squad, but he sounds like he's more... He's more interested in possibly bringing Wayne Rooney back to the club than he is necessarily moving to those Champions League spots. And that's just the nature of being an Everton boss. To stay relevant, you kind of have to do a little bit more. I think Pochettino would be an interesting choice. I'm not sure that necessarily fits in entirely, in the sense that it is kind of coming a little bit out of left field, as to take the American expression. And I think the Athletic Bilbao manager is a little bit more intriguing, because supposedly the club has been interested in him for quite some time, and he also has some Barcelona links as well, so he fits the bill more than anybody else. I think it's, for me, it probably sounds like it's going to be between Sampaoli and Valverde, and I would, you know, I think Valverde is probably a safer bet for the club. Sampaoli is probably a more inspired choice and the better choice, because like I said, Messi is that rare player that is more than the club, and you got to keep him happy.
We talked last week when we were talking about Leicester City and Claudio Ranieri. One of the things we touched on was what you're saying when you make a hiring. And it's not as simple as just bringing somebody aboard. You know, you're saying certain things. In the case of Ranieri, I think we all agreed that it was kind of a signal that we are focused more, making this move, we are focused more on staying in the Premier League than we are, you know, winning the Champions League and things like that. And I think that the big names always kind of get bandied about when big jobs come open, you know. And in this case, we're seeing Arsene Wenger and Jurgen Klopp and guys like that. But I think there is a time for that for big clubs, but I don't think it's right now with Barcelona. I think that Sampaoli is a good hire. He's got kind of the attacking style, the flair that Barcelona's used to. And it's not like the cupboard, you know, you've got Messi. You've got the MSN trio up top. You've got other pieces. There are holes to be filled. Don't get me wrong. There are things to be fixed for sure. But, you don't want to have a sea change. You don't want to overhaul everything at this point in time. So that's why it makes more sense to bring in someone like him or Ernesto Valverde, or, you know, it's not even a thing. Like, you don't necessarily have to have been with Barcelona in the past. I know that's how they've trended in the past, is bringing guys aboard who have experience with the club in some capacity. But I don't think that one of those, frankly, if you bring someone aboard like Wenger or Klopp or somebody like that, it's kind of a blow-up job. You know, it's going to be – you're going to bring in a guy who, again, has that kind of attacking style, but with that kind of notoriety and the kind of ego I think they've built, which can be a good and a bad thing, you know, they're going to want to reshape the entire club in their image, arguably. And I don't know that that's the right thing for Barcelona right now. I don't think you need to make that huge splash necessarily. I think I kind of agree with Shahan. Like, I think that if Sampaoli is out there and he wants to do it, which he said he has, and Messi wants him, that's the kind of hire that you have to make.
I think an interesting wild card here is Juan Carlos Unzué, whose name is being mentioned quite a lot as well. He was or is still Luis Enrique's assistant, both at Barca, and before that he was his assistant at Celta. He did actually play for Barcelona, made 5 appearances between 1988 and 1990, before he had a long career at Sevilla. And what you've seen at Barca, I think, is that they've fared pretty well when they've promoted guys from within. I mean, Pep Guardiola was the reserve team manager. Luis Enrique at one point was the reserve team manager. Tito Villanova was Luis Enrique's assistant. He only wound up quitting as Joey referred to earlier because he had health issues. And, you know, like we were saying, I don't think Barca is a blow-up job. I think you can sort of build on what's there. It might need a few tweaks and it might need a few new players to kind of refresh things a little bit. But to bring in a guy who's going to have his own vision, like someone like Mauricio Pochettino or someone like that, you might wind up taking a few steps back. So there's value in promoting the assistant, even if it's at a big club like Barca.
Yeah, that seems to be – that would be the inspired choice because of the lack of prospects that have come through the Barcelona Academy. For whatever reason, there doesn't seem to be anyone who is on the precipice of really, you know, breaking into the starting 11 as far as I can see. So if you do promote, you know, Luis Enrique's assistant, then it seems to be there'll be the opportunity to bring in some of the young talent and play them. Whether you bring in a new coach, they're going to want to stick to, well, they're going to want to bring in some of their own people, and it kind of puts the, you know, the growth of the academy not on the back burner, but it's coupled with the other priorities of a new manager, you would think.
Yeah, I mean, it's I think Barcelona is due for a bit of a change anyhow. They it's not that their academy hasn't produced anybody. I mean, you look at a guy like Mauro Icardi in Italy, and he's scoring left and right and having a heck of a season. He has Barcelona roots, you know, he came through there. But yeah, their academy has not produced players for their team, and it seemingly has dried up. So I think that at this point, you're probably looking at somebody to restructure the academy and work something more long-term necessarily. You're probably going to be buying players in the transfer market regardless of who comes in. That's the nature of where Barcelona is currently, and that's kind of what we've seen with Luis Enrique too. He's had to go out in the transfer market, and if you really want to criticize him, the real critique is that he hasn't bought the right type of players that can really have that impact since he's been at the club. And, you know, I think that's a fair critique. A lot of the guys he's brought in just haven't been at that same caliber of player.
And there's also, I mean, the transfer ban kind of figures into this too. That kind of goes back, not to go too far off the point, but that kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier with why he did it right now. You know, not having those resources and that ability to bring in players, I think no doubt contributed, you know, because people see that he's not able to do this, but they're still like, you know, why aren't you winning every match? Why aren't you winning every title and every trophy that's available? And I think that was a part of it.
The manager at Barca doesn't have an enormous say in the players that they buy. It's the director of football, mostly Albert Soler.
And speaking of controlled transfers, our own domestic league, Major League Soccer, begins its 22nd season this weekend. And the reputation of the league is still, for some people, remains a retirement league, but that's changing. You know, there's a... If you look at the signings at this offseason, There is a push more for bringing in creative players from Latin America rather than relying on the bit, you know, 30-something aging star from Europe. But that's still, you know, MLS still struggles to gain traction in this country for whatever reason. And yeah, this is just a setup to get into a conversation. You know, why don't more people who are soccer fans in this country watch MLS? And I like to hear from, you know, look, I watch MLS. I've been, I go to the Galaxy games here in LA, and I've tried to, you know, not evangelize, but tell people, hey, look, this is something you should check out. For people who do, you know, typically watch soccer, they typically watch the Premier League and La Liga, and I get that. You know, Americans always want to watch what's best, right? But that said, we have a league here that's been growing. The product has grown considerably over the last 10 years back to when David Beckham first got here. So, I mean, I'm just going to throw it to you guys. Why don't you watch MLS?
This is an interesting question, and I'm going to speak specifically to my experience. So I'm not trying to attach this to anybody else, but I do hope that it kind of brings up broader points in this regard. For me, I don't understand the mentality that something, and I'm not necessarily saying that Don Garber and MLS has this, but nothing in this country that is popular, pretty much, outside of, like, I don't know, trash reality television or something, which is kind of built this way. Nothing, no sports league, no form of entertainment like that has been immediately successful, I don't think, within its first couple decades. So for, you know, the USA World Cup was obviously a huge thing. You know, you can kind of see how this built incrementally. U.S. reaches the World Cup for the first time in 50 years in 1990. Then we host the World Cup in 1994. Then we have our own soccer league in 1996. You know, I think that MLS is actually kind of where it should be. No, it's not going to, you know, right now, I mean, no, it's not going to take headlines away from the NFL or the NBA or things like that. And I don't think it should be expected to. I think that time is an important thing. And for me specifically, you know, I played in high school. I played all as a kid. I was a big soccer fan. So when we got a league and, you know, I grew up in Ohio. So the Crew were kind of naturally the team that I started to watch. And they had the soccer-specific stadium, the first in the country. And that was really cool to see. But in a certain way, I think MLS was sort of a victim of its own success in that regard. You know, the first matches were not that great. You know, the talent level wasn't that great. Some of the pitches were just disgustingly unfit to host a match of that level. But the league started to get a little bit better, and, you know, it gradually started to grow, like I hinted at. But then, because there was an audience for that, you know, these networks started to see that they could bring the television rights to the Premier League, the Champions League, and stuff like that, and give it kind of like a prime window. So all of a sudden, you have access, because of MLS, in a way, you have access to these better played matches and this better quality of talent. And that's what I kind of started getting more drawn toward. And, you know, going back to the point of time, I think now, you know, the past few years, every year I would say, I honestly would, like, I've watched more and more MLS. I think it's really great that we're trying to get this league, you know, up and running and becoming one of, it's already one of the top 10 leagues in the world, and maybe trying to get it even higher than that. And it's really important, I think, to the foundation of U.S. soccer going forward. But I also think that we are still, like I hinted at before, we are still kind of where we should be with it. It's going to be bigger than it is, but to expect it to, you know, that kind of change to happen overnight from one season to another, for me, is just plain unrealistic.
I think the biggest issue that MLS ever had, has now, and ever will have, is that you can watch all of Europe's big leagues pretty cheaply in America. If you have a half-decent cable package and you get NBCSN, you know, Fox Sports 1, NBN Sports, yep, you can see just about every league you want to see. You know, with the Liga MX easily available as well. If you live in Europe, as I did for most of my life, if you want to see the German and the Italian and the Spanish and the English league, you need all kinds of, like, premium packages. It's really expensive. It'll cost you €100 plus a month to get all of those channels. And that's not true in the US. And that's a big issue for MLS because, you know, primarily when you're a soccer league, you're an entertainment product that's going to be consumed through the television rather than in person. So you have all that built-in competition right there. And when you're an upstart league, that's something that's very difficult to overcome. I think the tangential issue is time zone, where the American soccer fan has sort of programmed him and herself to watch soccer in the morning. And by the time the MLS games come on, a lot of people have already watched two or three games and they don't feel like watching another game. I know from my own experience, I only started watching MLS, to be quite honest, when it became my job to. After we moved to the U.S., I started working at ESPN and they were like, hey, cover MLS. So I started watching it. And I feel that that's true for a lot of people where they're not maybe as naturally inclined to watch it. But once they give it a chance, they really like it. And I do now. And to Joey's point, I don't know that that's necessarily such a bad thing, because leagues that slowly work their way into the consciousness and that become part of the mainstream gradually, I think fare better over the long term than the ones that just kind of burst in. I think if MLS, you know, from year one to year three had become one of the leagues in the U.S., it would also be more prone to being a fad and to sort of being an overnight thing. And, you know, before you know it, you're NASCAR and you're on this incredibly steep trajectory up and then you're in free fall. So that slow growth, that time that it has taken the league to establish itself, I see that as a good thing. And I think they're making a really smart pivot now to going from signing, you know, Frank Lampard and Andrea Pirlo and Didier Drogba, because even though those guys had a lot of value in making the league visible and giving it credibility, I think MLS is at a point where it can be its own league and it can develop its own players, and it's signing all these younger DPs who are on the other side of their primes. And I think that will help further cement MLS as a league that's not just trying to get attention, but that's becoming a real league.
Just to retrace my own MLS fandom, it falls in line with a lot of what you guys are talking about. I grew up in the Bay Area, and a high school friend of mine invited me to go see the San Jose Clash. It was their second game in the ever in their inaugural MLS season. And I have to say, it was very underwhelming. It was a 0-0 draw. There weren't too many memorable moments of just chances that I recall. Sorry, Eric Wynalda. But, you know, we're talking about this smorgasbord of soccer that's available now. And that really began in the late 90s. I remember when I was working at ESPN, everyone was crowding around a TV, and they were watching the Champions League final, United against Bayern, and the crazy comeback where Ole Gunnar Solskjaer scores the goal, and people were going crazy. And you know, I joined the crowd around in the newsroom late, and I had no idea that we were carrying Champions League final games on ESPN's air. Next thing you know, ESPN has Champions League, Fox has the Premier League. There's this thing called Setanta. I think Gold TV eventually came about. So, and it was pretty readily available. You did have to pay, I think, $10 to get Setanta. But I think MLS is, you know, trying to compete with the leagues overseas. They're at a disadvantage because, as Leander said, it's in a perfect time slot. Saturdays before college football starts, you get to watch pretty much all the meaningful Premier League games, and at least. Well, La Liga starts a little later, but at least you get to watch the Premier League games, and now you get to watch Bundesliga. And, you know, we have other things to do. You know, as much as I would want to watch MLS, I have to go out of my way to go watch a Galaxy game. And in the early days, it was hard to figure out where do I watch MLS? What channel is it on? I couldn't find it until recently, where they have that Sunday afternoon time slots with FS1 and ESPN. So they finally figured that out. Now they're making the investment to grow, to improve the actual play. And it's really grown by leaps and bounds, guys. I remember watching the Columbus Crew and when they won the MLS Cup in 2008 and thinking, this is not championship caliber soccer at any level. I mean, Columbus Crew fans, you can rail against
people. What are you trying to say?
It was not good soccer. But now, if you watch, well, you know, the last cup final was once it got past extra time, it just became really ragged. But for the most part, the caliber of play is nowhere near what it was of the slog that it was 10 years ago when David Beckham first came to MLS.
Yeah, I will share my experience because I am the person here that does not watch MLS to reveal myself. And you know, even when I do watch MLS, I'll watch for like 5-10 minutes, grow somewhat weary of it, and be like, all right, they're playing, that's cool, and then move on. And some of it has to do with timing, but for me, it's bigger than that. It's the value in the league. And as much as, you know, they can sign big players that were stars or elsewhere, or even peripheral figures that become stars here, for me, I don't think the league has tremendous or like real value to me until they develop a player and he gets sold to Europe for big money, because that's the first sign where you're like, okay, this league is actually producing real talent, and you can start following players from their inception, their growth, to when they get sold out. You know, when you look at leagues in South America, whether it be Colombia, you know, Argentina, Brazil, all those leagues, they sell off their players. It's not like the talent stays there, and that's not what makes those leagues fun. It's that, hey, we saw this guy when he was 18. We saw this guy when he was 19. We saw this guy when he was 20. We saw him come up. We saw his talent. And then he went on and he became this giant world star after that. And MLS right now doesn't offer that to me. There's nobody where I sit there and watch and say, hey, you know, this is the example where, hey, it happened with that guy. He went and he, you know, we saw him when he was 17, 18, and then he got sold for $50 million. It's like, wow, that's a crazy amount. And I think that a lot of why the MLS doesn't get as many, you know, top-tier athletes from the United States going into soccer is because we haven't had those examples of big money sales. Because if you saw guys getting sold for those type of, like, that type of money being exported out to Europe from here, then I think you would start seeing a lot more people paying attention to the sport and saying, hey, I want my kids to go play in MLS. That's what I want them to grow up and do, rather than maybe play in, you know, the NFL or other sports in the U.S. that actually are known for paying you money. Now, we have had Americans that have played in Europe, obviously, but the path to play in Europe tends to be, if you're good enough, you just go there early and you play there from the start. And I understand the benefits of that, and I don't knock anybody for doing it, but I'm saying to add value to the league and make it more legitimate, I think that you kind of have to, at some point, develop a star locally and have him get exported out to say that this league isn't just investing money and importing talent, it's actually exporting talent too. Now, to go one step further to something you guys were talking about earlier, I think that the development and growth of the sport, I don't think that we can take away from the video game aspect of it. I think people have grown up now playing with Barcelona, playing with Real Madrid, playing with Manchester United, playing with these clubs that they don't necessarily get to watch with their naked eyes, but they're more familiar with, you know, the reserves on these rosters because they sit there and do their game management than they are with the first 11 for the Galaxy. They know the, you know, the 20th guy on Manchester United better than they know this third guy on the Galaxy. And that's because they're playing with these guys in video games. And that's increased the popularity of the sport, and the TV rights and the growth of the TV culture of soccer in the United States has gone side by side with the FIFA culture in the sense that not only are you seeing these guys in video games style, you're like, oh, that guy's really fast. Then on Sunday, you turn on the TV and you see the guy. And in real life, he is really fast. He's the guy blazing through. He's like, oh, that guy always scores for me on my team. Now he's scoring while you're watching him play. Now, it's tough to go from that to, you know, trying to get into the actual fandom of following a club when you probably also have a basketball team that you follow, a football team that you follow, possibly a hockey team that you follow. You already have these sports that you kind of grew into and you were born into, and now you're trying to kind of add another sport later in life.
I think this idea, though, of selling players is kind of anathema to MLS's model, and that's one of its strengths. While it has sold players who then thrived elsewhere, you know, like Michael Bradley or Jozy Altidore, Clint Dempsey, Brian McBride, and a few other international guys like Freddie Montero, guys like that. the league is structured in such a way that it's not dependent on the sale of players for its revenue. And that makes it pretty rare in global soccer. And I think that's an asset, really, because, you know, it's had plenty of players like Omar Gonzalez, I heard once, had an offer to go play in Russia, or, you know, guys who are sort of, you know, good MLS players, not stars, Graham Zusi, Matt Beisler, who could have gone to play in the championship or maybe for a low Premier League team, perhaps, you know, and they stayed because the league doesn't really need the money, because that's not how the model works. And that makes it sort of an outlier in global soccer. And that's maybe a little bit tricky for some fans to wrap their heads around. But just because a player stays in the MLS doesn't mean he's bad. It just means that the league probably chose not to sell him and made it worth his while to stay when his contract ran out, which, you know, in the grand scheme of things, not being a selling league and being able to really add to what you have every year and add more talent and make teams deeper, that's ultimately what I think is going to help MLS break into being one of those top five leagues in the world, which I think is within reach.
Leander, I don't think this will really improve TV ratings, but how important is it for MLS to win this incarnation of the CONCACAF Champions League?
I think from a credibility standpoint, it's hugely important, because it sort of says we can be a Mexican team. That's what it really boils down to. And to have the visibility of being in a Club World Cup, I think just kind of adds more credibility. At the same time, you know, two MLS teams have been to the CONCACAF Champions League final, Real Salt Lake and the Montreal Impact, and sort of lost there. So they have gotten to a point where they're competitive. There's going to be at least one MLS team in the semifinals this year. When it boils down to a final, you know, it's just kind of a little bit of a coin toss. So, you know, I think at this point it's just kind of bad luck that they've never won it. But it would be helpful. I think the biggest thing for MLS potentially that could happen is if they, you know, CONMEBOL could be talked into combining the Copa Libertadores with the CONCACAF Champions League, just as they combined the Copa America with the Gold Cup last year and turned it into one tournament for the Western Hemisphere. I think there'd be a lot of logistical issues, as there'd be a lot long travel distances. And again, MLS would be more competitive if it changed to a fall spring schedule, because right now they're really penalizing themselves by being on a spring fall schedule and having sort of those knockout rounds start when they're really in the middle of their preseason. But I think that could do a lot to help the league standing in the world, where they can be competing with River Plate and Boca Juniors and Grêmio and Botafogo. But, you know, the CONCACAF Champions League, it's not going to get noticed so much, but getting to the Club World Cup is.
Final thought on MLS, if for those people who don't have a team to follow, what do you think is a team for people to, you know, for new fans for MLS to follow? I think maybe FC Dallas, because of the way they're heavily invested in their youth academy, and they've brought up some of the most exciting talent. Still, they got a couple of kids coming through this season. I think that's a team that plays the way, well, a little bit like how Arsenal plays, in that they keep it on the floor, but they're not against, I think, you know, any team's not against playing long ball. But I think that's a team that's really doing it the right way. They're not going after the big name DP, wasting money on an aging European star. They're growing their own. You know, they sold Castillo last year to a Trabzonspor, so they've actually, you know, sold a player that they've grown.
I don't mean, I understand that they do sell players. What I'm saying is, imagine if Christian Pulisic was playing here and you saw him, you know, grow and develop into this guy that all of Europe wanted to bring over. He was playing until he was, you know, 21, 22 here, and he was really top box office here. All of a sudden, people do start following the MLS to say, hey, we're really, like, we have talent that the world wants, and it's going to go to the top leagues. I think that adds a little bit extra value and credibility to the league that unfortunately doesn't exist currently.
That could be a whole other podcast, because the teams are investing in their own academies. They're all giving kids opportunities who, you know, this pay to play structure, other kids who wouldn't get the opportunity are getting it from MLS academies. And, you know, there are clubs who, you know, every now and then, there's the current structure will reach out to a kid who can't pay for the outrageous fees and have him come through the academy. I think Jozy Altidore went through that experience. But, you know, MLS is committed. There's this groundswell to duplicate what FC Dallas is doing. The Galaxy have been doing it for years. You know, you're going to see that this year with kids like Bradford Jameson IV and Jack McBean, who've been with the academy or been on the outer edges of the perimeter of the first team of the senior team. So, look, that is a whole separate podcast, and I think we're going to leave it there, and we're going to get out because Leander has some interviews to do. But thanks, guys. We got to go. So for Leander Shahan, Joey, I'm Joe Lago. Until next time, this has been the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast. Thanks for listening.